Freshly, this is the February Meet the Pack event. I'm your host, Zachary Wolf, with Mark Sherrod here, author of Nick Rock. Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well myself.
Good.
Before you dive into the book a little bit, do you want to give us a bit of an overview on characters, plot?
Sure, yeah. So the world is set sometime in the future. We don't know exactly when, maybe 50 years, 80 years, 100 years, we're not sure. But I guess some of the motivation behind the book goes back, I guess, a few years when I was still living in California, and all in the same day, I think my car pooped out on me, garage door wasn't working, cell phone didn't work, and I said, I've had it with modern technology. And I'd complain about technology at dinner, and my wife got tired of it. She said, you just complain all the time about technology. I said, yeah, because when it works, it's great. When it doesn't, it's a problem. And so I referred to technology as a modern inconvenience, and she kind of got tired of that term as well. But it led me to think about, you know, how dependent we actually are on technology. And I'm actually in the animation industry and animation education. And so on one hand, my livelihood is surrounded by very advanced forms of software and complex processes. But on the other hand, I realize that we can become overburdened and over-dependent on technology, and that can be a problem. And so we all have smartphones except me, and I was just showing a couple of people in the audience I still have a flip phone because I'm not giving in. I'm not going to do it. But the idea is, you know, at some point, you know, when do we go from asking Siri about, instead of where are the pizza parlors in the area, when do we start asking Siri about what job should I have? That's a problem, right? That's a moral choice that's been taken from us. Siri is no longer this advanced database that gives us information. It's now taking the place of this. And I guess that's a concern because I could see us going in that direction someday, maybe in the not too far future. So that's a concern. I think that's really kind of where this book started. I gave you a long, drawn-out answer. But.
No, that's fine. Do you want to read a portion of your
story? Yeah. So I try to, based on my own experience, maybe the high school years, 14, 15, and what was interesting is I found when this was up on Goodreads, a lot of the people who were actually trying to get the book for free were late teenagers, female, and early 20-somethings. So I kind of missed the demographic, but that's okay, because I found that demographic really reads a lot, and they like dystopian science fiction. So so I'm gonna read a couple of parts here. So the title Nick Rock is the name of the main character. I wanted something that would stick in people's minds. Rock. I thought that might, you know, be catchy. And to me, Nick represents, as best as I could establish this, the 14-year-old in today's world. And my son and daughter were very helpful in helping me establish that. Because they would say, Dad, people don't say it that way. Okay, then. So this is a 14-year-old. He's moved. He's moved from back east somewhere. Out west, kind of like the whole old Karate Kid series, for those of you who remember that. I'm sure that was inspiration for me somehow. All right, so this is his reaction to the move. And I was hoping that a lot of kids, because we live in a very mobile society, a lot of kids would be able to relate to this. Okay. Nick hated the move. When his mom initially approached him about her job transfer, his first thoughts were that it might not be such a bad thing. He'd always heard living near the coast had its perks. Well, I can see beaches, plenty of sun, maybe the chance to meet girls. Tommy said he'd come and visit sometimes, and Tommy's usually disapproving parents gave their consent, surprising even Nick. So if it was one and only friend was planning to visit, at least seasonally, and Tommy's parents were willing to pay for it, well, he found himself over the last few months almost looking forward to the move. Not anymore. The original lure of the change in location wore off quickly in the first few weeks as Nick found himself feeling alone. His mom was always at work. The requirements at her new job forced her to stay late every night. Pizza had become stale. Even his favorite pineapple and mushrooms he now detested. Worst of all were the things he now missed, which he hadn't realized were so important. Back home, after his dad disappeared, the places they had gone together grew exponentially in importance. In the first few months, walks by the pool where his dad taught him to swim and the field where he had learned to ride a bike brought painful waves of memories. As time passed, fear replaced sorrow, as Nick realized his dad might not come back. Acceptance finally arrived, giving him the opportunity to visit these places when he struggled with his performance at school or had a fight with his mom, imagining that his dad was walking with him, giving him advice. He hadn't thought about those walks for a few years. Working part-time after school to help support his mom didn't allow for time to revisit. Yet those places were never far away, either beyond the woods or behind the government buildings, depending on whether he was at school or work. Now that he was nearly 1,000 miles across the country, the distance seemed immense. Nick pulled himself out of his unhappy thoughts and headed up the steps. Ronald Reagan High School was an old, large structure. The lack of any grav lifts to the higher floors is testament to its age. Well, anything is better than staying at home these last few weeks, though. He'd come to consider his home a prison rather than the ideal summer vacation spot he thought it would be. Students watched him as he made his way to his homeroom, sizing him up along the way. Faces might be different, but types are still the same. Those three in the corner trying to break into the hallway's environmental access panel, hackers. The beefy guy at his locker with the swarm of hollow medals pinned to his varsity jacket, each replaying his final match victories, the state champion. And of course, the smart kids who took classes over the summer at the nearby state university already have their mini screens out comparing the results of yesterday's final exams. Other than these, the nameless rabble, the great majority who seemed to drift by unnoticed from year to year, well, they were there too. All looked up as he went by, taking account of him for a second before moving to their own homerooms. Nick entered his class and found an empty seat. The top of the seat seemed to be splitting, but was still usable. He gazed around the room, making comparisons with last year's classroom back east. Here, the desks had mini-screen outlets that would allow access to the school's mainframe. They were old. His previous school had universal outlets, which could accommodate any mini-screen. Here, he would have to search for an outlet for his mini-screen. The back of the room has only one 3D holographic chamber, and the Enviro disks look old. I remember this back in sixth grade. When are they going to upgrade? Sighing with disappointment, he turned back to his desk and realized something was wrong. Where's my chair? He looked around at the other students. They had been there, already in their seats, except for one student at the desk immediately in front of his. This rather large individual had come in and taken the chair while Nick had his back turned. The split at the top of the chair confirmed it. Summoning up the courage to face the gargantuan, Nick approached him. Excuse me, that's my chair. The room fell silent. Nick tapped him lightly on the back to get his attention. Immediately, the boy rose, dwarfing Nick by more than a foot. It was not only the height, but the size that made him realize this was the same kid out in the hallway with the medals. All of the others were watching intently. The Hulk brought his face down close to Nick's face, reminding him of a giant bear closing in on its prey. "Don't touch me if you know what is good for you," he whispered, ending with a sharp poke from a sausage-sized finger to Nick's left shoulder. Feeling angry and embarrassed, Nick momentarily dismissed his precarious situation and attempted to take back what was rightfully his. "Get lost," the monster barked as he removed the chair from Nick's grasp and held it high over his head. "Nobody cares about you, little new boy." "Just great. I sure am gonna like it here." Okay, so that's the first part. And again, I tried to capture, I think, what, you know, people feel when they move, right? A sense of being alone and being called out. And, you know, it takes time, I think, for people to get used to a new place, especially in today's society when everyone's moving around.
So where does the conflict strike for Nick Rock? We've seen him kind of introduced into, you know, the world as more or less a normal kid. So things are going to take a sharp turn for him, I imagine.
Yeah, he discovers that there's kind of a world behind the world we live in. There's something behind the scenes that's controlling society, and there are things that he is exposed to that lead him to believe that there is. something going on. And there's a scene where he actually meets somebody who hands him a book. And actually, I think I'm going to read that scene, because in this day, this period of time, books are kind of anachronistic, outdated. So he does meet somebody who kind of helps convince him that, yeah, things aren't as they seem. Actually, I think the part I'll read is when he and Willow were starting to become friends here, and they do talk about books here. So yeah, so they're doing a history science project, combined project for school, and again, the attempt is to have people be able to relate to, you know, being able to do school projects. So, what kind of hist science project are you interested in, Nick? Willow asked as she sipped her Fibro B. Nick looked at the ceiling, trying to come up with something. I'm not sure. Maybe we can look to see what's happened over the last 30 years or so. Willow paused, lost in thought for a few moments, and then started to rise. Oh, good idea. I've got something for it. Hang on. The girl disappeared around one of the corners in her parents' library. Nick wondered how Willow managed to live here alone. He heard the virtual counselor at school had determined it would be best for her to remain living at this location despite what had happened. He didn't agree, but shrugged off the idea. What do I know about modern counseling? Nick heard cabinets open and close, a sound of ruffling, and finally a squeal of triumph from Willow. Apparently, she had found something important. Willow soon returned with a heavy, old book. She blew the dust off the cover, causing Nick to choke. Sorry, it's been a while since anyone looked at this. I remember when I was young and Dad would have me on his lap reading this with me. It's from a long time ago. I'm not sure exactly when. Willow handed the volume over to him. Nick eagerly grasped it with both hands. He found it odd that the girl with the reputation of being a loner was so willingly engaging. Perhaps she just never had a chance to feel like she could really talk to someone. Well, he knew that feeling well. So this is a book? He asked excitedly, opening the cover and staring at the title page. As Nick received the tome, he was surprised at its weight. It was much heavier than he anticipated. He imagined a person trying to carry around 1,000 of these in the old days in a large bag, just as he could carry thousands of more virtual books on his mini screen. The idea was comical, yet the more he thought of it, the more he envied the people of the past, holding books, reading them, passing them to friends. With the book came a solid feeling that you actually held a valuable possession, that it was your own. Slowly, he leafed through the volume, poring over the faded pictures. Willow smiled as Nick closed the cover and stared thoughtfully out the window. I reacted the same way when I read one myself for the first time, Willow reminisced. Couldn't put it down. My parents used to have lots of them before, well, you know. Nick brought his gaze to focus on the girl, a look of compassion crossing his face. I'm sorry, we don't have to do this if it brings back painful memories. We can go on the screen instead. No, it's fine. Willow breathed in deep, bit her lower lip, and straightened. I want to do this. I think it's important we do this project using this book. Taking the book back and opening to one of the chapters, Willow read aloud. Expectations in the advancement of medical science 2025 and beyond. Early challenges in the development of an artificial pancreas. DNA research in the advancement of depression intervention. In vitro meat experimentation. The list goes on. Wait, that last one. In vitro meat? Willow looked up at Nick, puzzlement clear on her face. Nick tried to recall the expression. He'd heard it before, a reference to artificial meat of one type or another. Technically, all meat was artificial now, as was just about all food. Nobody now thought of it as a bad thing, but he imagined the first generation of people dealing with this novel concept, and as a result, their lives changing immensely. He knew the explanation would make Willow queasy. Yeah, I think I remember a little bit about it now, Nick began. Delicately, he couched his words. Back then, they began experimenting with food, I think in an attempt to be able to feed everybody. That was before countries enforced limits on the populations after the war. Nick paused, finding no way around the truth. Well, it used to be that people would eat real meat. You know, animals. An expression of amazement passed by Willow's face, and then one of doubt. The girl broke out into giggles, punching playfully his arm. Good one, Nick, she smirked. Her expression, however, turning still cold as she realized he was telling the truth. All she could utter was a single word. Barf. What? Nick responded, unsure of her meaning. What did you just say? Composing herself, Willow continued. Well, since we were talking about a long time ago, I thought I would use one of their expressions that meant, well, something between I don't believe it and I feel sick from thinking about it. Anyway, why don't we continue? We have to be able to find something of interest in there. Here, let me take a look, maybe from another part of it. Let's see, advances in computer technology. Moore's Law holds through 2055. When nano-built carbon filaments make it possible for much more rapid advancement in computer speed. Yeah, let's keep going. Voice synthesis, holographic projection, home defense and climate control systems. Look at these pictures, Willow. Grandma had one of these. Turning the book in his friend's direction, they both enjoyed a hearty laugh. The picture displayed a young woman in her 30s, dressed in the clothing of the time, a single satin outfit complete with a short-cropped hairstyle. The Z9750 home computer grid promised to keep all rooms at the individual lighting and temperature preference settings, create all meals, and alert all inhabitants of unexpected guests approaching the home. And maybe we should just leave this one in the past, Willow concluded. Keep going. It says here universities made exponential leaps in the field of artificial intelligence, Nick said. In 2030, first two on the West Coast, then one in London, and finally a fourth in Shanghai, all claimed to have created a computer more intelligent than man. Nick paused and placed the book down carefully, treating it as a prized possession. He tried to search his memory. There was an element of familiarity to the term artificial intelligence, but he was unable to place it. I remember this one, Willow mentioned proudly. Back then, the goal was to see if computers could outthink a human being. At first, they played games with the computers, who would win because they wouldn't get tired from all the games, while the humans required rest. Eventually, they tried to build it into the computers a sense of morals, but they always failed. The logical choices were not always in the best interests of people. One time, one of the computers was asked to make a choice between a few horses and a single human in a survival situation. The computer chose the horses. When asked, the answer was that the horses would survive longer in the winter conditions than the man, and thus were more useful. I heard that one when I was a little kid, something my parents told me. I'm impressed, Nick said. You certainly have a memory. Thanks, Nick, Willow responded. You know, I think we have our HIST science project. With your ability to recall these kinds of details, we are sure to get a good score. Besides, I'd like to find out why the early computers couldn't make the right moral choices. So that's kind of where the AI starts to come into play here. And it starts to lead to a greater adventure where the two of them are working together and they start to find out that society is not really the way they thought it was.
Okay. What would you say is your favorite scene in this whole book? Like your absolute crowning moment?
That's a good one. So I towards the back of the book, there's actually a battle scene, and you know, in science fiction you can't have, or you have to have battle scenes, right? I mean, that's part of it. So I've drawn upon what the people in my family, they're all involved in the same martial arts. It's a Japanese form of martial arts called Kendo. And if you've ever seen it, that's when people dress up in armor and they fight with bamboo swords. And so everyone but me is doing it. Although there's pressure to do it. And so there's a scene where the female lead, if you will, the protagonist, Nick's love interest, is in battle with somebody else. And so it's probably my favorite scene because it's representative of somebody overcoming challenge. So that's probably my favorite scene, that battle scene.
So it's like a kendo, but also I'm guessing sort of futuristic way also, or?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I try to keep true to the sport as it is today.
Okay.
But at that point, I make references that in society, individual challenges, I wouldn't say sports, but this type of activity has kind of replaced what we have today, which is, you know, real emphasis on the team. So it's done in the future, but they're still kind of battling the way it's been, you know, done for.
Cool. So you got different elements of time kind of coming together at once.
Yeah, I don't really try to establish what year it is. I kind of leave that up to the reader to think when this might be.
Were you involved in the cover design? Did you have a part in this?
No, my involvement was when Diana sent it to me, and I got that tingly, excited feeling when I saw it for the first time. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's really going to be a book. wow, and it's got a guy reading a book.
Was this the first design that came to you? Or?
Well, yeah, and my thoughts were asked, but I'm like, pretty cool.
All right, sold.
So, sold. I mean, I like it because, you know, it just, you know, you don't see the face, right? And I think the reader can kind of put their own face on that. And you've got the numbers, the binaries going in the background, and that evokes a sense of mystery and obviously something computer related, but we still have the book in the front, which is neat.
And kind of the most prominent thing on the page, actually.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Almost looks like the back of the $1 bill, doesn't it?
Who are your film or writing heroes?
I guess, you know, I grew up and I still read. I'm doing things chronologically right now, so I just, over last year, maybe the reason why I'm not writing the sequel is I'm reading a lot. That's not a bad reason. Is that a bad reason?
No excuse.
Okay. So I did read a lot of Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Heinlein, mm-hmm. Ursula K. Le Guin I'm reading now. Philip K. Dick, who else? Vonnegut. So this is all good stuff. And then, you know, I've got like 6 or 7 more I want to read and then break back more into the modern age and go back to stuff I read in high school, like Orson Scott Card and William Kirk Gibson. And I guess William Kirk Gibson really helped me get interested in Japan and that whole element. So, but there were some books. I'm embarrassed to admit I've never been able to make it through Dune. I don't know why.
Yes.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to ask you this for a while. I know that you do a great deal of graphic design elements, game design for Sony. You worked for them for a while. I want to know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Does the imagination for this book, especially the physical scenes, do you imagine those in a literal sense first and then write them?
I'm going to disappoint you. You know why? Because remember the last time I read, and I'm a pantser, right? I people like this man.
Hold on to your belts.
Fly by the seat of my pants, right? But not entirely. I still have a whiteboard at home that I wrote down all these technologies and crossed off some and added others. I guess to answer your question more directly, I don't know if I visualize these. I almost take the technologies and try to see their logical conclusions. And some of those, you were saying, will this scare you? There are some technologies out there that I probably didn't put in here because I am a little scared about them. Like, where is this going to go? I mean, something like nanotechnology is great to be able to, like, repair the body. But if you ever read something, Neal Stephenson writes about this, I think it's in Diamond Age, where, you know, nanotechnology can also kind of pollute the environment. And that's a problem, right? If we've got enough clutter outside orbiting the Earth, debris and whatnot, and so if it winds up in the atmosphere, that could be a problem. But I guess, Diana, I look at where these technologies are going to go, and I don't know if I can visualize the world, but I try to think, okay, mini screens and screens are the internet of the future, and you know we already have ways we can connect in very small miniaturized ways to the internet, but it'll even be more so someday. So what will that world look like? But I try to visualize where the technologies are going to be. Yeah.
So some powerful things to contemplate as you read through this gripping dystopian novel. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thanks.
Thank you. This is Nick Rock, available now on GrayWolfPublishing.com.